Our guest today is Victoria McWane Creek, 2020 Minnesota Women's Press Changemaker, 2021 Facing Race Award honoree. I could go on and on with her accolades. Victoria has been a changemaker as long as I have known her. She's versed with years of experience in designing, instruction, and curriculum design that leads to lasting change and action. One particular forte is Victoria's art in facilitating critical conversations. Examples include her Respectful Conversations Project and the MLK Day Rural Racial Equity Summit. Victoria is a graduate of the University of North Dakota with a master's in instructional design and performance improvement. She is a scholar, a practitioner with expertise and experience in rural Minnesota, empowering communities towards that effective and inclusive change. She has been an active community transformer who walks the walk. You know, that's exemplified by her run for third ward on the Fergus Falls City Council, dubbed the risk taker change maker. Victoria sees these challenges as opportunities and is working to change the face of Minnesota. So welcome to Wake Up Minnesota. You are also the founder and president of Organization for Full Participation, focused on that racially equitable performance improvement and organizational effectiveness. We are so glad you're here, Victoria. We know you have a lot of support and wise words for our rural leaders.
Wow. Thank you so much for that introduction. It's good to be here with you, as always, my friend.
When we talk about rural leadership, and especially rural leadership for BIPOC, let's talk about leadership style, because I feel like there's a difference, you know. So can you tell us about your leadership style, how that evolved, and are there intersections with your identity as a woman of color?
That is a heck of a question to start off with. So I think for me, the most important thing to know about me and my style and the way I navigate this world is that I'm about the community. And so I stay focused on what is going to make my community or the community that I might be working with, one that supports and works for as many of us as it can, which means all of us, right? So for me, that really does mean that I am a person who is inspired to really facilitate other people in their movement and their expertise, so that we can have that one shared goal and vision and engage and deliver and execute upon that vision together. As a facilitative leader, my approach really is to ensure that everybody has input into what the actual problems are, and not just assuming that I understand the problems. Those who are closest to those issues are the ones who know what the problems are and where the kinks in the system are. And that those are the folks who are most equipped to help determine the way forward, the solutions that will give us the outcomes that we're looking for. And that means equitable outcomes.
I like that asset-based.
Yeah. I don't always use the term, but I do the work. And that for me is really important, to be able to develop people so that we can achieve better results together. Make sure that our communities, our organizations, our families work well and are striving towards their own identified goal.
Yes. And I think leaders forget, you know, leading isn't always being up in front of the room and saying, this is how it is and this is what you're going to do. Effective leadership is how, well, you have worked with Essential Health, you've worked with Department of Transportation, and you've worked with Extension. And I remember, you know, having that facilitative discussion where we came to the point of, oh, okay, these are our challenges.
Right.
And getting on that page, you know, that's a gift.
You know, it's really about slowing down in order to go further, as opposed to going fast and trying to get to some arbitrary destination. If we can be on the same page in the same book, right? It does matter, right? I can be on page 23 in one book and you can be on 23 in another book. And it's page 23, but we're not on the same page. And I think really being able to ensure that we are having the same conversation, that we're making meaning together and co-creating shared understanding about what is at hand and what our vision and our outcomes are meant to be. Only with understanding really the roots, the factors that contribute and influence the situations that we as leaders in our communities have, is to stop, is to assess and survey the landscape, and then identify one or two specific things that we can do and achieve with excellence, right, in a defined period of time.
Yes. What I appreciate so much about your leadership, Victoria, is that you're not hesitant, you're not afraid to say that we do have some problems. There are some issues that are either blatant or maybe even underlying, but that they're there and that they exist. Sometimes, especially in our state in Minnesota, it can be easy to try to jump to the solutions, right? But I appreciate so much that you're willing to say, let's slow down, let's really look at what's happening here, so that then we can be on the same page and have the conversation about what to do next and how do we do it together. I really, really appreciate that.
Thank you. It comes from a place of, I want to say not being heard, that I want to make sure that we are, that I enable people to speak, that I create the condition through my leadership style and practices that allow folks to show up as they are with the gifts that they have to contribute to the greater good, and that we use those, we deploy and leverage that, the strength that we all have on behalf of our communities and organizations. And so I thank you for saying that, because it's important to me to make sure that we voices are heard and that we're not shutting anybody down.
Right. Yeah. And as we talk about voices not being heard, especially in our communities with Black, Indigenous, and people of color, I think in the context of Minnesota, there's a lot of stereotypes about what leadership looks like, or myths about what leadership looks like for Black, Indigenous, and people of color. What has been your experiences encountering some of those myths, or in your work, how does that show up?
Another good question. And a difficult one for me to answer in a manner that I think is not circular to some extent, in that I have always, it seems, right, been over-prepared, right, over-qualified to do whatever it is that I am being chosen to do, with particularly with regard to my professional career, and that my skills and expertise have been underestimated or minimized, right, and not utilized and leveraged. And I think that is part of the mythology that that I have faith, you know, that Black women need more stringent supervision, right? To be micromanaged, to I felt that I've had to really be able to twist myself into pretzels in order to show up in ways that is acceptable and palatable for this rural community that I live in. At least that's something that I used to do. It is not something that I do anymore. And being aware that I was doing that, when I became aware that I was doing that, it took a lot of unlearning and practice with being okay with being uncomfortable about the fact that other people were going to be uncomfortable because I was going to emote in a way that they may have felt uncomfortable with. Because that's just how I grew up. That's my culture. We are expressive, right? And so being bigger and taking up space is something that I am trying to do now, as opposed to being minimized and underestimated. You will see me. And whether or not we agree on any specific issue or challenge that we are facing, you're going to understand where I stand, what my perspective is, and I am going to do all within my power to understand what your perspective is and where you're coming from. And then perhaps we can figure out how to move forward beyond assumptions, beyond myth, beyond the negative stereotypes that are rampant in our community.
Right on. I'm so glad you touched on that and that internalized racism, really. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to fit into what other folks want you to be that makes them feel good.
Right.
And I know that is a recurring theme in rural Minnesota with BIPOC folks looking at, or even in those positions of leadership, the balance. Who am I? Mm-hmm. Who do you want me to be?
Yeah.
So you talk about that work.
That is the work of being self-aware and self-determined, right? In order to self-actualize. That is the work of life that I've come to understand is the work of life. And being able to articulate and say the words that need to be said, to the people that need to hear it in a way that they can get it, right? So when I say that I don't twist myself in pretzels anymore, I don't, but I will shift my message so that I can make sure that you get it. Because that's the point of me sending a message to you, is I want you to understand and receive what I'm saying the way I intended it to. So that means I need to know a little bit about you in order to deliver a message that you can receive and still be me in the process.
And as I hear you talk, and I love how your voice is so calming, and like, I just love that you take time. You take your time. And I admire that. You take your time to speak. You don't rush through it. You don't through it. You just do it, you know? And I love this self-aware, self-determined to be self-actualized. I think that is so, that's so beautiful, and it's so spot on. And I think that's part of our podcast is uplifting the diversity of leadership and recognizing the ways that leadership calls us to do different things depending on what your identity looks like. Mm-hmm. For leaders of color, for Black Indigenous leaders, it's not only just the process of leading, but it's also the process of understanding who you are in the leadership landscape. What does it look like for you to lead? And what does it look like in different spaces that you're in? Because you have to learn how to lead authentically with yourself. And then I hear you saying that you also have to learn how to lead in spaces where people might be a little uncomfortable with who you are. They might be uncomfortable with your confidence or your brilliance or your commitment to yourself. And I feel like that is our podcast, beyond, like you said, beyond the mythology, beyond the one box fits all leadership approaches, but thinking about what does leadership call us to do, especially for people of color. And I think part of that is that emotional intelligence piece that you bring up, which is that self-awareness, that self-determination, that self-actualization. So I'm excited to hear about that as well. So for example, this morning I had a meeting and I was talking about my experience being a DACA recipient, growing up undocumented as an undocumented immigrant in this country. And the meeting was with some school administrators, and their question was like, what advice do you have? What tips do you have for helping our students who are in that same situation? And I said my piece, but after the meeting, I had to kind of sit there with the emotions of this clashing inside of me, where on one hand, I felt like I did speak what I needed to about how it's important to see people, it's important to acknowledge systems and how they impact us. But I felt this pull or this guilt that I didn't fix it for them. Mm-hmm. I didn't fix it. I didn't tell them the solution. I didn't say, oh, well, just do this, and then suddenly things are going to change for your students. And I feel like that's part of that emotional intelligence piece. That's part of that self-awareness, self-determined piece as a leader of color. You kind of have to really do a lot of self-regulation, self-exploration of your own emotions to be able to get clarity on your path and how you want to lead authentically. So Victoria, can you speak to your approaches to emotional intelligence in your work as a leader in rural Minnesota?
You know, I am one who, I used to have I was in AmeriCorps Vista for 3 years at a community action in New York Mills, actually, back in the day. And one of the things that I got during our orientation was one of, you know, those silicone wristbands that were really popular for a time. They probably still are, but I don't have any. Anyway, I had one that I wore everywhere that said, inspire by doing, right? And so as a leader, it is incumbent, I think, on me to, and when I say lead, I really do mean, first of all, lead myself and be real clear that I have to manage myself first before I can attempt to really engage with another in how we are going to do something together. But being able to inspire by doing and modeling what it means to be fully human in the workplace, to not compartmentalize, to bring my whole self into a situation which allows me to bring my experiences, my expertise, my cultural influences to bear for the greater good is something that I take really seriously, because for me, being able to show up 100% Victoria, who brings with her, you know, Vicky from the west side of Chicago, as well as Victoria, the doctoral student, right? All of that, the Victoria, the mother of now adult offspring, the professional, bringing all of that to bear and enabling not just myself to do that, which is very vulnerable making, but to set the conditions, again, to enable other people to do it. And folks won't do it if they can't see it. We have to see. We have to be able to see that it is possible to be productive when necessary. I'm not all about, you know, producing and performing all the time. But I think that when necessary, I can focus myself and those around us, around me, to get the job done. And in order to be okay as a human being who is contributing to community development and engaging with my fellow citizens, it is really important to me that we are able to show up and bring all of ourselves. And sometimes it doesn't look good, right? The self I bring is maybe it's not the version of myself that I would like to bring to each situation, but at that moment, it's the best self that I have. And I want to bring that to the situations that I find myself in. And I feel like modeling that, inspiring by doing, is one of the best things that I can do, and that any person who considers themselves a leader can do, is to walk the talk, practice what you preach. You know, that means being self-aware, knowing what will trip my trigger so that I can make sure that I am able to manage myself when that trigger is tripped, because it will be, right? I'm not going to walk through life and it be, you know, no cobbles are lifted from the street. It's not a smooth path. So being able to practice self-awareness on a regular is crucial. Understanding my own implicit biases and where they come from. Another thing that's really important. I wasn't really a fan of implicit bias until I started to really dig into what it is all about. And once I understood that it could be a bias for as much as it is a bias against, right, it began to make more sense to me. And I'm like, okay, I get that. So like I used to have and I still do, I'm just aware of it now, used to have a real bias for older white women. Like I felt like they were safe for me. And this is because when I was a kid, when we moved to rural Minnesota, and my dad and my brothers would go and help our neighbors and on their farm baling hay, I would sit in the kitchen with the wife, the farmer's wife. She would make cookies for me. She taught me how to play a couple of different kinds of solitaire. She just made me feel really safe. And so I just associate, you know, automatically older, silver-haired women, white women, as safe, knowing that in reality for me, that has not been the case, right, at all occasions. And so being able to recognize that I have to manage my own biases, or I have a bias for another bias for young Black men, like I want them to be okay. I want them to be safe. I want them to feel human. I want them to be able to experience the totality of the human spectrum, whatever that looks like for them. Recognizing that in previous jobs, I've had to balance that and be like, okay, I can't penalize young white boys because they're not young Black boys, right? So being aware of my biases and is another thing that I think that a leader who is emotionally intelligent is going to be able to practice that awareness. And then recognizing also that given or depending on where I am in a organization with regard to authority and position, that there are some things that I can do with the stroke of a pen to alleviate some barriers, to ensure parity. And so auditing the policies, practices, and procedures that are at play in your realm of influence, and acting on that information to make sure that the work that you are doing as a leader is not, is actually delivering equitable results on purpose, right? Not by accident, because I've taken the time to look at the issues and I've taken the time to assess where there are opportunities, and I've engaged with folks so that I understand the impact of the system and how it is, how it may or may not be privileging some and hindering others.
So when you talk about, I know you've worked with a lot of organizations, and when you talk about making those changes, you know, that's then where organizations can continue to heal and grow.
Mm-hmm.
Are there spaces where a community got it right? And what was right?
So I'm thinking about that, particularly, I mean, I've lived in several of the communities in Otter Tail County. And so I'm going to think specifically around this geography. And one of the places that just got it right, where it felt right from the start, was New York Mills. And the way in which they, when we moved into that very small rural community, where I want to say we were probably the one or two Black families there, we were welcome. Unlike several communities that we've lived in Otter Tail County, where instead of being welcomed, we were, as a family, we were profiled. We were, you know, the police were called on us as for existing in our space. And so I think being aware and being intentional about welcoming people and including folks in community happening, that is what New York Mills did really well. They reached out intentionally. They didn't have a welcome basket, right? Nothing like that, but literally inviting me and my family to events and to engage in community development activities and to lead those things that resonated with me and intersected with my skills and expertise. Just providing an opportunity for me to immerse myself and into the community, get to know it and affect it because I was there. That is something that was that I've not experienced since. And not that's not to say that it living in a small rural community like New York Mills was perfect, but they did get that right. They got that right. I don't know if they still are doing that. They were a Horizon community at that time. But they got it right when we were there.
And I think what you said is so, it's like, it's perfect. In this work of community development, especially in rural communities, we're not asking people to be perfect. We don't ask ourselves to be perfect either. But just like you said, what does it look like to provide an opportunity for things to happen, for change to happen, for welcoming to happen, for inclusion to happen? I mean, that's the first step, right? It has to be, there has to be some openness, some willingness to think about, well, what if? Mm-hmm. What if things could be different? What if things could change? What if even this small invite could make someone feel like they were seen and that they belong, that they have a place in a community? I really love that idea of not being perfect, but having an opportunity for something to happen.
Yeah, it's critical.
It is overlooked.
It is underappreciated and undervalued, but the simple act of generosity and grace, right, that lend themselves to being a welcoming, hospitable place. I think about the word hospitality and I think about the word hostility, they have the same root word, host. Mm-hmm. So you can be hospitable or you can be hostile and you are still hosting, right? What is the choice that you're making with your hosting actions and activities? Are you choosing intentionally to be open, welcoming, warm? Or are you choosing to be closed and hidden? Mm-hmm. Which do you want? Pick, but those are the results that you will have, right?
That is a great way to look at it. Yeah. And it is. It's hosting authentically, and it's hosting with what you said, that grace. Mm-hmm. I want you to be part of this. Not a call out for folks to put the onus on BIPOC to be mm-hmm. the educators, not to say, okay, go out and find yourself somebody BIPOC and follow them on Twitter or whatever. Yeah. I mm-hmm. love that differentiation because that's hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. bias.
Yeah. I learned a lot from my grandmother, Lily, and when I hear voices in my head, it's my grandmother's voice that I hear the loudest. And she was the hostess with the mostest. She would throw out the welcome mat. In fact, it was always out. Strangers could walk through the door and they would get a meal. She was just that person who was like, if it's mine, it means it's ours. You are welcome to it. And when you are here, this is us. And so this us is going to look different than another us because the configurations are different. And I think that community development is also in that way, that when we have individuals who live in the community and we have people transition in or out, we then have a new community. At least that is what in the best situation is happening, is we are creating a new community based on who is present. Not just who shows up to the meeting, but who is actually present in the community.
As we look at that differentiation, showing up versus presence, what advice do you have for leaders to bring along? You know, it's very easy to just have a presence. And it's safe.
Yeah. So for people who want to be authentic, to authentically lead themselves, which then enables them to inspire others to do the work that may lead to a shared vision, it is really important to recognize that, you know, differences in our backgrounds, our perspectives, and our experiences are assets, right? They need to be affirmed. They need to be leveraged. They need to be brought to bear for the community. And so when, as leaders, we are seeking input and engagement in order to do something, to accomplish some task, to achieve some goal, it is incredibly important that we look beyond the folks who typically are showing up. I mean, this is not anything new, right? This is not rocket science, in that really going to where people are instead of asking them to come to you is going to be the key here to ensuring that we have the possibility of having diverse voices heard, diverse voices contributing, diverse voices deciding together on the path forward. So I think that's number one, is recognizing that differences are assets and that we need to leverage them as such. We are aware also, if we're an equity-minded leader, that there is some systemic inequity and that we have to work to very hard to make sure that, number one, we are eradicating them when we recognize them, and that we are being very thoughtful and intentional about what we initiate or institute that is brand new, so as to not privilege some and hinder others. And then we have to really base our decisions not on hunches, not on assumptions, not on myths, but on the data. What is the evidence that supports or negates any of our practices, our policies, our procedures? What are they saying? And in order to understand what the data is saying, we have to disaggregate it. We have got to segment it out and not just take all the compiled average and say, well, we're doing pretty good. We have to be able to drill down into the data and look at different segments by race, by ethnicity, by disability, by household income, and see who is being impacted, who is being hurt by our ways of doing things, who is being helped by our ways of doing things, and then how do we make sure that we are designing ways forward that are universal with regard to access. So to me, that really does mean thinking about those who are most marginalized, having a plan for that particular segment, because when we take care of the most marginalized, everybody succeeds. It helps everyone.
Why is desegregation so hard? Anyway.
Not rocket science.
I know.
Get into the data, dig into it, and then ask some questions. Interrogate not only what you think the data says, but why you think the data is saying that.
Yes.
And then gather some more evidence to support or negate that. Talk to some people.
Right? It's not just about the, quantitative. It's about the stories too. Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Well, going back to that story that you were telling about your grandmother, the hostess with the mostest, as you said, I think as educators for Jen and I, this is the kind of story that we hear so much in rural Minnesota. I think I've heard so many stories about people's grandparents and or how things used to be, where we were more communal or we were more together. And when I hear you say that, I think of how beneficial it would be for us to imagine that things could be like that. Like what holds us back from that happening, and what holds us back from including people. And then also for us as BIPOC leaders, especially leaders who are starting their leadership journey, who are starting to speak up more, who are starting to step into their power and their confidence. What does it look like for us to allow ourselves to be in those spaces and to feel like we do have something important to say? So for you, Victoria, as a leader, for someone who's talked a lot about this emotional intelligence, about coming together, deciding together, and having grace for each other, what would be your word for emerging leaders, especially those who may feel like they're the only ones that look like them? What would your word of advice be to them?
You know, I think first, you, particularly for someone who is up and coming and noticing the disparate treatment and disparate outcomes, it can be really disheartening, disappointing, and makes us sad. All of those really negative feelings that are associated with not being honored as a full human. I think so for me, taking care of myself, or you know, that the young leaders need to take care of themselves first, because we can only pour out if we're full, right? And so take care of yourself, Additionally, you know, make sure that you're curating a network of support, being really intentional about where you are making relationships and reaching out to others who may look like you, think like you, have similar backgrounds or experiences that can support you through the disappointments that will often confront us. So that's really important to have to take care of yourself and to curate that network of support. And then I think really importantly, particularly as a person who walks around with a Black woman face in a predominantly white rural community, to be able to engage from a place of loving compassion, not only for myself, but for other people, right? No matter who they are, what their background is, and even what their thoughts, we can have completely diametrically opposed beliefs and values and still honor the fact that you're a human being on this earth who is deserving of dignity, honor, and things like that. So just making sure that the place that you're coming from is one that is compassionate, that is loving, that we can correct, right? We can correct with love. We can provide feedback that is constructive, that is meant to build, not destroy. And I think that's where I'm coming from every time I open my mouth, is how can I build? I call myself a disruptive developer, right? So I'm going to, if I see an issue or a situation that looks like I need to intervene in some way, shape, or form, I'm going to disrupt what is happening, whatever that cycle or pattern is. I'm going to do my best to disrupt it. And that might mean that I'm calling the question. And at the same time, I am willing and able to be part of the process to develop an answer for that issue or situation. And I think that is what is essential to being able to build a community, is to, as much as I am one who would say, let's take this whole thing, dump it all out and start over, I recognize that that is not going to happen. So that means we need to be able to disrupt and develop at the same time. Play in both of those positions. And so do that with love.
I think that's a perfect ending. Thank you, Victoria, so much for being here with us today on Wake Up Minnesota. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, your experiences, and also encouraging us all to be disruptive developers as we carry on our work, and also to carry that self-awareness, to get to that self-determination and that self-actualization. Thank you so much for your time.